This is the Three Things Podcast, brought to you by the Greater Bloomington Chamber of Commerce in Bloomington, Indiana. In each episode, we will discuss three things you need to know about the local business community, as well as things that may benefit your organization.
Hey, everybody. It's Erin Fredmore, the President and CEO of the Greater Bloomington Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the podcast. We are still recording remotely because of this crazy COVID-19 thing, but we're going to try to, at least today, get you through a little bit of it and reduce your angst and anxiety around financial situations. This episode is sponsored by IU Credit Union, and we're discussing that financial health issues during a pandemic. I'm joined by Tony Rostel, the Vice President of Business Lending. Hi, Tony. How's it going?
It's going well, Erin. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for being here today. I know this thing one, so we've got our podcast split into three sections here, Tony. Our thing one today is all about business health, financial health during a pandemic. And I know at IU Credit Union, you guys have been helping individuals figure this stuff out since it all happened in March. So the first question I have for you is, how are you and the team doing with all the different, I imagine a lot of stressful things have happened at work lately for you guys?
Sure, and a lot of it is learning as we go. But for the most part, we're handling things just as we always do. We're still making brand new loans for business members. And we're just continuing to try to do business as usual. And if anything new or tricky comes up, we tackle it as we need to.
Yeah. Well, and I imagine there's been a lot of that new stuff in the last several months. One of the first things I wanted to talk to you about was what a lot of businesses that we've been hearing from, a lot of our members have made in their business plan. I've heard a lot of times people joking, like, I never put down the pandemic that was going to be an issue for me. Like, it was going to be competition or supply lines or some other sort of thing like this, but a pandemic and a total lack of customers or a total lack of the ability to connect as they normally do, that sort of stuff. They never anticipated that. What sort of advice, if somebody, here we are several months in, are dealing with financial issues right now with the pandemic, what sort of things, what advice do you have for them?
Well, I think the first thing that I thought about through a lot of this is something that I have told customers for many years now. And that is a lot of small businesses, they don't have any fallback as far as a line of credit or anything. And I've been telling customers for many years, it's better to have a line of credit and not need it than not have a line of credit and need it. And I think we've ran into that a lot here in the past few months, where we've had business members who have never had to do any type of business lending in their life, all of a sudden need something to help get them through, whether it was 1 or 2 months of total shutdown or even longer. And now they're trying to apply for lines of credit, and we're able to take care of most of them. But it's again, it really goes back to, it would have been better to have that done ahead of time, and that would have been a nice fallback as we hit the pandemic. The other thing that we've worked with a lot of members on are the SBA, PPP, and EIDL loans. The credit union ourselves, we are not an SBA lender, but we have partnered with an online marketplace and had a link on our webpage through the first two sessions of the PPP lending, and have helped almost 100 of our members get PPP loans to help them get through this past couple of months. And hopefully Congress can get it approved to continue that. And we are all set to continue to work with members on getting those loans going forward once that's opened back up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even just the first two pieces of advice there, right? So the line of credit and then the PPP or the SBA loans, anything like that, that's all around liquidity and cash flow, right? So that's the main crunch that we're seeing for our businesses, is just being able to keep things, the doors open and things moving when their everyday cash flow is dried up.
Right, right. And that's why it's always nice to have that line of credit in place when you don't need it, because it is a lot harder to get approved for something like that when things aren't going very well for you.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. And so it would have been good to do it ahead of time. If somebody's listening and they haven't done that yet, what do they do? I mean, where do they start? What do they need to do?
I still recommend applying for a line of credit. Obviously, this is something brand new for everybody. And so we are looking at the historic numbers. We are going to understand that the past 3 months may have been, or 4 months may have been difficult for them. So we're going to really look at 2018, 2019, look at what they're doing to move forward from this point on to make sure that the business can still survive. And again, I think a lot of those businesses have gotten that PPP money to help carry them through the last few months and keep their head above water. So we'll work with members to get lines of credit if they've had a good, strong, viable business for the past few years that just hit a hiccup because of the COVID pandemic.
Yeah, well, that's good to know. So they still should apply. Now, what about the SBA loans, the PPP and the EIDL loans? Are those still available for people to apply to as well?
Right now, the PPP is not. The funding on that ended, I believe it was August 4th, but most likely Congress will get it done to approve additional funding for the PPP. And like I said, we've already got the link ready to go on our website as soon as that is opened back up. EIDL loans are pretty much always available through the SBA as long as there was some sort of economic disaster. And so I definitely, if you have not applied for an EIDL loan, I would recommend applying for those. You are also able to get a grant through that program up to $1,000 per employee that you have.
Okay, so they could be able to get that grant funding. They also could get up maybe a loan as well. And all of that's there. I think that website is sba.gov, is it not?
Yes. Yep, and okay. EIDL loans, you apply for directly through the SBA. You do not work with a financial institution on those. You go straight through the SBA, you get your money directly from the Treasury.
Okay, so we've got those two options for individuals as they're thinking about their business financial health. What other things should people be considering when they're trying to plan for, say, the next month, 3 months, 6 months? What sort of things do they need to have in mind?
Well, I think obviously looking at putting together a good budget and a good cash flow analysis. If you know that you will be closed for the next few months, obviously you're going to depend on grants and loans to get you through that. But if you know you still have cash flow coming in, I think the most important thing is to watch your expenses. And the best way to watch your expenses is having a budget already put together ahead of time that pretty much keeps you to point that you have to watch those numbers.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like you said, that's that cash flow, making yourself stick to that budget and try to do that is obviously going to keep your head above water as you're dealing with all these kind of crisis and unknowns as we're moving forward through all of this thing. One of the things that we've noticed, some of our members are pivoting and doing new things or having new lines of business during all of this. They may be a restaurant suddenly has a thriving takeout business as opposed to if they're traditionally in the restaurant. And I just want to mention this for our listeners too. So there is Project Hope, which is a program with the Kelley School, working with our local ISDBC, Indiana Small Business Development Center, and Steve Bryant. So they're working together to help businesses get online that maybe haven't had a strong online presence before. So when you're talking about cash flow and trying to figure out exactly what, you know, what's going to be viable moving forward, I do want to mention that. So if anybody is interested in following up about that program, it is free. And they'll have Kelley students be able to help get you online. When you guys are evaluating loans and trying to figure out kind of the, from your perspective, the risk of doing a business loan, is that the type of thing, do you like to see that from businesses to be able to see that they're trying to kind of stay current and more responsive to those kind of pressures?
Yes, I've many times recommended the Small Business Development Center as well as SCORE as an outlet for members, especially small businesses who may not have a accountant, chief credit officer, or chief financial officer, things like that to fall back on. So I've recommended the SBDC and SCORE to many people to sit down and talk about a business plan for their, whether it's because they've been growing a lot. I mean, I'm not just talking about through the pandemic, but throughout my career as a lender, I've been making those recommendations. But I definitely think at this point in time, hitting any kind of a resource like that to help you look at your cash flow, look at your numbers and see what makes sense for you is definitely a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think there might be, I mean, I know of things that come across my desk all the time of people offering to help, or, and especially with IU here in town, being able to connect with individuals there. And like you said, the Small Business Development Center out at Ivy Tech, they're working there all the time. And all of that is free as well. So we do have a ton of free resources for businesses to use. I do sometimes see there's a reluctance for businesses to really open the books to outsiders, to really take that advice or to figure that out. And
I think a lot of it's pride also.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think it must be. Well, and pride goeth before a fall, I guess, what they always say. But there's a reason that small business owners are proud, right? They've built this thing.
Right.
And they've done it on their own, and maybe, of course, they've gotten help along the way too, but it is a source of pride for them. So to be told that maybe something isn't exactly the way they need to be doing it anymore, or their idea that was good when they first started isn't going to work in this situation, I think that must be hard news to get and to reconcile yourself with, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes it takes being told no two or three times to realize that you do need to make some changes. It's not always best to have people just tell you yes all the time.
Yeah, that's probably true too. So when people come to you and you turn them down for a loan, what does that look like? Is that when you're saying, hey, maybe SCORE is an option, or Small Business Development Center, is the door still open and they can come back with a new plan, or how do you work with them on that?
Definitely. I always try to work with people. I don't like to just say, no, we're not going to be able to do anything for you. I like to talk to people to say, here's the issue that we're seeing. Here are certain ways that you can go about correcting that to maybe come back in 3 months or 6 months' time. I do recommend, again, SCORE and SBDC to work with. Sometimes it's a situation where they just don't, they may have decent cash flow, but they don't have collateral. And in that case, I recommend different financial institutions that are SBA lenders, because they can get an SBA guaranteed loan, not just the EIDL and PPP, but the standard SBA programs to do loans through them. And so it's not always about me making a loan for people. A lot of times I'll recommend a competitor, because they're going to be able to provide them with something that we can't.
Mm-hmm. So you're just really looking for that goodness of fit for whether or not it's you guys or someone else, right, trying to get them plugged into those things. Okay. Well, if people had more questions, so if we've got listeners right now who are dealing with some cash flow issues or worried about the pandemic, or they are, I'm sure they can see their, cash on hand and that sort of stuff too, how many months they have left. Well, how would they follow up with you, Tony, if they had further questions and wanted to talk to you about some of the things we talked about here on the podcast?
They can call the credit union at 812-855-7823 and then ask to speak with a lender from Business Services. Or if they want, they can email me directly at arastall@iucu.org.
Okay, that sounds great. And just like you said, iucu.org, that's also your website. So if anybody had any questions or wanted to just look at general information about what some of the products you guys have available through business lending, or personal lending for that matter, they've got all that information there on the website.
Yes, correct.
Great. Well, thank you. Is there anything else you can think of that would be helpful for us before we wrap up that to share with our listeners?
I would say the only other thing that I can think of is, not just from a business perspective, but from a personal perspective, I talked about putting together a budget and sticking to it. And that's been something that I personally have done for 20 years. And I know it's hard for a lot of people to do that. They don't want to see necessarily what the numbers look like. I mean, when I was first doing that, I wasn't making very much money at all. And it wasn't always pretty to see whether or not I'd be able to make the ends meet all the time. And when I first talked to my wife about doing it when we got married, she didn't like the word budget. And so we changed it and called it a spending plan. And she learned very soon that when you put the numbers together, if you stick to it, you find that you can stretch the dollar pretty far sometimes. And so I think that's a key for anybody, is just make sure that you know what your numbers are and watch, make sure you spend properly.
Well, that's great. And that's a great way to end, is just being intentional. All the dollars in have a name and a place, and they're all going to be used for something. Knowing your dollars closely, intimately, as they go through your account. Well, that's great, Tony. Thank you so much for spending some time with me. I really do appreciate it.
No problem at all. Thank you for having me, Aaron.
our thing too this week, guys. You've got a few events coming up that I've mentioned before, but are right around the corner. Tomorrow, we have our Unmask Hometown Heroes Award. And we're going to be giving those out to amazing people that have helped through our community throughout the pandemic. So be sure to check it out. It's at 11 o'clock. It's not too late to register. And if you're interested, you can send an email to Stacey Bruce at sbruce@chamberbloomington.org to be able to register for the event. So our next event is going to be next Wednesday, which is Morning Buzz Zoom edition. It's been going great so far. So if you've missed the opportunity to see your peers and colleagues throughout the community, make sure you sign up for Morning Buzz. It'll be 8 o'clock on the 26th. And again, you can go to chamberbloomington.org to find out more information about that. Last thing, next Friday, Be Will, that's Bloomington Women in Leadership, is going to be celebrating women's suffrage with Laurie Burns McRobbie as our special guest. It's at 11:30. Find out more information, chamberbloomington.org. For thing three today, we're going to continue our conversation around financial health during this pandemic. And as I mentioned before, this whole episode has been sponsored by IU Credit Union, and you can find them at iucu.org. Answer lots of questions about business lending, personal lending, different products and things like that they might have available for you. At this minute, though, I'm going to welcome Jessica Merkel to the podcast, who's an attorney with Bunger & Robertson. So how's it going, Jessica?
A great Friday.
It is a great Friday. I've been talking this episode all about financial health. And one of the things that I have heard, you know, because my finger's on the pulse, is that there have been a lot of people that have been attending to their estate planning needs during the pandemic. And I don't know if you have seen that increase. I know in your work, you're an expert in estate planning and do this sort of thing all the time. Have you seen an uptick in people who are interested in having these conversations?
Yeah, there's nothing like a global pandemic for people to, you know, feel their mortality in a way that makes them reach out to lawyers. And it's true. No one wakes up in the morning and says, my golly, I really want to meet with a lawyer and talk about my death and dying. But the people's illnesses, and I think being in also sort of this liminal time, this liminal space that we're in, where we've been spending a lot of time in our houses and our PJs, and we're ruminating over what's important to us and what we do with our stuff and our money and how we treat the people around us, I think is something that people now have the space to think about. So yeah, we've seen a significant uptick in our estate planning requests for our estate planning services, which I love because, you know, you probably know this, but over half of American adults do not have any type of estate plan.
Over half? I did not know that, Jessica. That seems crazy.
It is crazy. And typically, you know, I find that the people who are the most in need of estate planning services are the least likely ones to get it.
They've avoided it.
Yeah, it's a bit of the ostrich effect. It really is.
All right. So let me ask you, so just so that we can encourage people to think this question, the 50% of our listeners right now who don't have an estate plan or a will, what happens if you die without a will? What's the process in Indiana? What's the punishment?
Is that the state gets to dictate to your heirs who receives what of your assets. And a lot of times people think, oh, it'll be fine because it'll all go to my spouse. Not true. Okay. So if you die without a will, you die what we call fancy words intestate. Okay. And your spouse does not get 100% of your stuff if you have a surviving spouse. What that spouse gets actually depends on whether or not they're a first spouse with which you have children together, or if they're a subsequent spouse, meaning maybe a second or subsequent marriage that you don't have children together and they get less. So if your intent is to give money or all of your estate to your spouse, do a will. If there's, you know, maybe some tortured family relationships that you want to make sure that people don't get parts of your estate, you need to put that in writing. Otherwise, the state just says where it all goes.
That is definitely motivating for me, although not me personally, because I have a great husband, Andrew, who is indeed listed in my will, and it's okay with me that he gets my stuff. But it would be motivating for lots of people to just not cause that angst and anxiety, no matter your marriage state or whatever's going on. What happens if you marry and there's not an obvious heir and you haven't made a will? What does the state do then?
If you marry and you don't have any other children, I mean, It goes back.
No. If you're not married, if you're not married and you don't have family that you would naturally like a legal heir.
Yeah.
Then what does the state do?
So it's really interesting. It kind of goes back up and out your family tree. So even if you don't have, it goes to parents, grandparents, siblings, it kind of, there's a really complicated map. But if you keep crossing out all those generations, it could go as far out as your second cousins or their children. Yeah. So it gets really messy. And so a lot of what people talk to me about when they come and do estate planning is I want to make this easy on my family or my friends or charity or whoever they want it to go to. And the only way you can do that is if you plan ahead.
Yeah. All right. So we're motivated. We're ready to make this will. So what sort of things do we do? Are we encouraged to think about when we're doing the estate planning? Like what's the process like with you guys?
So estate planning isn't just doing documents. It's actually knowing how those documents affect and impact all types of your estate. And so it's one of the things that attorneys need to know is they need to know what you own and how you own it. Okay. Because a good estate plan covers one plan, but multiple types of assets. A will only really governs what we call our probate assets. Assets that are owned solely by the decedent, without a joint owner, without a designated beneficiary, a payable on death designation, a transfer on death designation, and aren't titled to a trust. So for a lot of people, that's not the vast majority of their wealth. A lot of their wealth is wrapped up in retirement accounts or life insurance policies that have beneficiary designations. So you want to make sure that you don't have any hiccups, that you have this great plan with your will that says, oh, maybe everything goes to my spouse, but maybe you have an old retirement account that says it goes to Susie Q. Well, that will go to Susie Q. The will doesn't govern those types of assets. So you need to have an integrated, holistic estate plan. So attorneys need to know who you are and who your loved ones are and where you want your money to go. They also know, we need to know what your money is to make sure it actually goes that way. And then, you know, they also are going to encourage you to think in the alternative. So we're not the masters of our universe, right? We don't know in what order we're going to die or what order we're going to become incapacitated. So maybe we say, oh, we want everything to go to my kids. But what if my kids pass away before me? Then what? I know these are really kind of uncomfortable questions to ask and really icky, and we don't really like to go to explore them. But that's the point of estate planning, is to kind of try to figure out what these contingencies are and then plan for them.
No, yeah. And for our listeners, so Jessica and I are recording remotely, but we can see each other sort of like a Zoom. And I just made a gross looking face on, you know, with my mouth when she was saying about thinking about some of those hard things. Because you're right, Jessica, the idea, that's not how life is supposed to unfold. And so it is difficult to think there. And I wonder, I mean, that's probably why so many people avoid estate planning and sort of even going there, because it's really hard to think through some of that stuff. What do some of the people say after they finish? I mean, is there a sense of relief after they finish an estate plan? Are they like, wow, this wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be, kind of like going to the dentist? I mean, what sort of feedback do you get from people as they finish with you?
Yeah, they do feel like an adult. They kind of joke that they feel like, oh, they can breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief that they've done that. They feel like they know a whole lot more. Because as an attorney, I don't want them just to sign something that they don't understand. And maybe I'm a big nerd, but I want them to understand what that means and how it impacts their life and other people's lives. So I try really hard to explain it to them. And I think they feel responsible more than anything else. So dust off their hands and, you know, they're out the door. They're pretty happy about it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And it's not as arduous of a process as they think it is going into it.
Yeah. Well, and I have to say that when we did our wills, it was really a helpful exercise for us to have conversations or finish conversations, maybe. I would say it that way. Like, we'd had them over the years and sort of talked through some stuff, but hadn't really gone all the way to decision making or anything like that. So it required us to talk to each other and really think through pros and cons. And it was hard. It made us think about our kids in different ways, which was funny, to imagine them as adults. Like, what age would they be able to inherit? And what if we died? You know, it's just, it was not all awful, I guess I'm trying to say. Some of it was very funny because you know your loved ones and how you can imagine how they might be impacted by something like this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So if somebody is listening to us and they are motivated to do some estate planning, Let me ask you this. There are, I want your opinion on the online will opportunities that are out there, because I know that that is an option. So what are the pros and cons to going to a live person versus maybe going online and filling out a form?
So I believe that there is no one size fits all estate plan.
Okay.
And the huge value of dealing with a real attorney is that that attorney is able to ask you questions. If this, and then what about, you know, when the client says, well, I have this mom that I've been giving money to, and I really want to make sure that my mom's okay, but maybe my mom's on government benefits. You can't get that type of issue spotting or dialogue or thought process with an online module. You just can't. There is no way to replace that. You also don't get this integrated estate plan that I was talking about. You just get documents. And sometimes those documents aren't worth the money you paid for them. If the vast majority of your assets are non-probate in nature and they're not integrated in a way that would really effectuate your estate plan holistically. Most people are like, when I talk to them about that, they go, excuse me, what? My will doesn't just take care of all of this? I'm like, no. And so those online forums or those online forms don't do that. You know,
it's just a part of the solution. I mean, it's not like you said, you don't know all the things you might need. And it's just one piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. You just get paper and that may or may not be the whole shebang. Right. And so there's really no way. And a lot of them, they're not up to speed with Indiana law or the whatever state you're in. So they're just sort of like plug and chug, put your name in, you know. When they first came out, some of us lawyers did one just to see what it's like, and they treated our dogs like our kids as far as like creating. You can't replace it. It's sort of like, would you ever outsource a surgical procedure to someone who doesn't have the appropriate boards and experience, you know, to a bot? No, you wouldn't outsource a medical procedure to a bot. Mm-hmm.
My dogs are barking right now because somebody's come to our front door. All right. So that's helpful to know that it's not that maybe the online is kind of a quick and dirty. It's not going to fit all of the things that you may need. And that interpretation of a real life person is going to help us to have a better product at the end is what I'm hearing you say.
Correct. I mean, that's the end planning, is that it's true, good documents that are specific for those individuals. And it's you have that coordination of the assets. You know, the con to it, and it's a barrier to entry for a lot of people, I think, is the price point, because you get what you pay for typically with estate planning. But usually, you know, a lot of us estate planners have been moving from the traditional billable hour, which can to some people can be really scary because they feel like it's going to be, you know, kind of a blank check. They're moving towards what, you know, fixed fee or a package billing. So, you know, exactly what you're getting and exactly what your price will be at the end. You know, but at the end of the day, I want people to have an estate plan, but we want it to be good and not throwing good money after bad.
So if for those listeners that we have that have already done the will and they dealt with it and it was like hard, but they did it and they were so proud, but it was 15 years ago, do you need a checkup for your will? And if so, how often are you supposed to do that? And here's another question. What if you have a will and then you have another kid? Does the other kid gets automatically swept in if they're not named? Like, how does that work? So those are two questions.
Two questions, compound questions. I'll take the first one, then I answer the second one. So if you've done a will and you've put it aside because you're like, whoa, that adult thing is done, you really should pull it back out on what I call qualifying events or every 3 to 5 years. Okay, so qualifying events would be if there's a birth, if there's a death in the family, if there's an adoption, if you win the lottery, you know, if there's a divorce, or if you just have a bad relationship that somehow goes sour, right? Or the relationship improves, okay? Those are reasons to pull back those documents and go, ooh, does this still feel good for where we are in our life as a couple or as an individual? Does this still feel good? I have a lot of people who are like, yeah, we did this when our kids were minors, and now they're 30, and it's not written in stone. It really should be updated. And a good rule of thumb is to, when you start putting your taxes together, because that's also a painful thing, let's just rip off the Band-Aid and take our estate planning documents out and see, do those need to be updated? Oftentimes they do. And oftentimes if you have good bones, again, this gets back to having good documents. If you have good structure, it's very easy to make those changes. To answer your question about the kid, so if you have a document and then you later, you know, adopt or have another kid, they may be integrated by reference because it may say, I intend for this to apply to all children now or for thereafter adopted. It depends on how the will is written. But I will tell you, if you never go back and name that child, they get a little ticky-tacky about it, right? They're like, oh, it's always the last one too. They're like, oh, you named my first two, you know, siblings and you didn't name me. Thanks. So good measure is to go back, update it, make sure it's okay.
Yeah. It sounds like a really good a script for a good soap opera. I'm sure it was a script for a soap opera, in fact.
I'm sure they made a movie after it.
Well, that's great. All right. Well, Jessica, as we finish up, if people are, like I said, motivated, ready to go, want to contact somebody, how do they get a hold of you or someone at your firm to be able to start talking about estate planning?
Yeah, that's a great question. So our phones still work, our emails, you know, that we have a phone number 332-9295 is the main line. You get routed. We have a website where it has everyone's profiles, what each attorney does, what they specialize in. If they do, there should be an email contact there. And, you know, even though we're in a pandemic, our phones work, Zoom works. We're still doing wills. We're getting them signed. There are ways around all of this. So there is no stopping good planning.
All right. Well, what a great way to end. So everybody go, if you haven't already, go get your estate planning done. And if you've done it, check it over and make sure it's still accurate. Word of the day from Jessica Merkel. So thank you, Jessica, for joining us.
All right. Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Three Things Podcast presented by the Greater Bloomington Chamber of Commerce in Bloomington, Indiana. You can subscribe to this podcast on any podcast app. And you can learn more about this podcast and Bloomington, Indiana Chamber events at chamberbloomington.org. If you enjoy the show, we'd love for you to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.